Hello, it's Ed Gamble here from the Off-Menu podcast that you're currently listening to. I am on tour now. The show is called Hot Diggity Dog. Make sure you go and get yourself a ticket. I'm probably coming to a town near you if you live in the UK and Ireland. And Ireland, Dublin and Belfast. Do go to edgamble.co.uk, buy yourself a ticket, and I'll see you for an evening of Hot Diggity Dog.
Hot Diggity Dog!
Thank you, James.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Off-Menu podcast, cracking open the coconut of conversation and pouring out the humour milk from within. Hello, James.
Hello, Ed Gamble. My name is James Acaster. Together, we own a dream restaurant. We invite a guest in every single week and we ask them their favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side dish and drink. Not in that order. And this week, our guest is...
Yotam Ottolenghi, a wonderful chef.
And superstar just chef.
General chef and foods superstar, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's got so many... there are people who are massive Ottolenghi fans who will be very excited about this episode. People really fascinated with... how he comes up with recipes.
Yeah.
Like, his restaurants are amazing as well. I'm sure a lot of people want to hear about
his
that.
His books.
Yeah.
I read them like books, James.
Yeah.
Like actual books.
Like a novel.
Like a novel. Oh, my God. The guy's fantastic.
Speaking of which, he's got a new book out,
He's got a new book out, of course. The Ottolenghi Test Kitchen, Extra Good Things. It's the second in the series of the Ottolenghi Test Kitchen books. This is really interesting. I've had a look through it. It's incredible recipes, like always, but then they've all got like a condiment or a little extra twist that you can then take and use on other things.
This is great, because that gets you properly thinking like a chef, right?
Gets you thinking like a chef, like there's some like sprinkle stuff that you do, like an everything seasoning on one of the dishes.
Yeah.
Then you can take that and put it on eggs.
Great.
You
I've actually got some everything seasoning in the cupboard.
Right.
I don't know what to put it on.
I don't think the point of the book is you don't need to cook anything, you just got it in your cupboard.
Huh?
I think he means you've got to do your own in the book.
Well, I still have, like, tips on what to put the one that I've got on.
You can put them on eggs. Is it the one from Hale and Moan?
Yes.
Yeah, but I put it on some fried eggs. It's fucking delicious.
Great, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Ed.
But you should absolutely go and get Ottolenghi's new book. It's the Ottolenghi Test Kitchen, so it's Yotam himself and Noor Mourad and the rest of the Test Kitchen super team. And
wow.
Smoky sweet nuts spooned onto oven fries, then used to top hummus the next day. It's all great sort of adaptable, flexible stuff.
And we'll definitely be asking Yotam more about the book in the episode as well. But here's the thing. He better get that promo in pretty early, because if he says the secret ingredient, an ingredient which we deem to be unacceptable, we will throw Yotam Ottolenghi out of the dream restaurant. And this week, the secret ingredient is...
Mild cheddar. What is the point?
I want to taste it. People have seen me flip my lid about cheese on here, but that doesn't mean that I prefer mild cheeses to strong cheeses. I actually prefer the strong ones.
You got to feel it.
Yeah, what's the point of eating cheese if you can't even taste it? Then it's just the texture and that's it. It's not like the texture of cheddar's the best thing about it, is it? Come on,
cheese, don't peck me on the cheek. Pull my trousers down and put your finger up my butt.
Yes, please. That's all you want. Put your cheesy finger up my... Well, I was going to say cheesy bee, but like... I don't think my B's that cheesy.
No. The B's not cheesy. The F is cheesy.
Yes.
Yeah. Finger.
Yeah.
We need to look confused and also devastated by that entire riff.
Also, if Yota Machonengi does choose mild cheddar, I guess we will have to say, oh, what? You want a cheesy finger up your B?
Yeah. What's You're telling me, Yota Machonengi, that you don't want a cheesy F up your cheesy B?
Yeah. What is your problem?
See you later.
So we will be
Yotam becomes Gotam.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
We will be forced to say that to him.
Yeah.
And I don't want to.
No.
But if he chooses mild cheddar.
More like Notalengi.
That's good. Gotam Notalengi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope he does pick mild cheddar now.
Yeah. And we will have to say that.
And Gareth Edwards picked mild cheddar. And I completely agree with you, Gareth Edwards.
I think Gareth Edwards has chose ingredients in the past.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, we haven't turned his name into a chant or anything because it's quite a normal name. Gareth Edwards. Oh, yeah, I've heard that before.
Cheers, Gareth.
Yeah. It's a nice name, though.
Yeah, lovely name.
World record breaker, Gareth Edwards. Triple jump.
That's Jonathan Edwards. Gareth Edwards is a rugby player, isn't he?
Maybe he broke a record or two, a rugby player.
So, without further ado, this is the off-menu menu of Yotam Ottolenghi. Welcome, Yotam, to the Dream Restaurant.
Nice to be here.
Welcome, Yotam Ottolenghi, to the Dream Restaurant. We've been expecting you for some time.
Here we are.
Oh, I just had lunch and my mouth doesn't work.
What did you have?
Have you heard of Farmer J. Finsbury?
No.
Well, so got some farmer grains, some chicken, and some, there's a little hispy cabbage and miso aubergine side that they do in a chickpea salad. So I had that in a little tray.
All the nutrients you need.
Yeah, exactly. Right, literally. Yeah. Miso, aubergine,
Chickpeas, you said?
Yeah, chickpeas look in a little.
What else do you need?
With some peppers and tomatoes in there.
Sounds delicious. Yeah, I'd have that.
We went light and healthy for lunch.
Yes.
On these long record days, if we go crazy at lunch, then you can always tell in the episode.
Yeah, no, actually, I was telling you about the tour that I'm doing with Noor, and one of the stops, I can't remember where it was, we had this big ramen bowl. And I just, like, it wasn't the same. It was just not the same. It's just really, if you eat something, it just brings the energy down or something.
Oh, it massively does. And yeah, and when you're touring around, you want to try places. You want to try new places, but it's so hard.
It's hard because you arrive, you're there, like, you do your sound check and all that. You do the thing, and then it's like 10:30 or 11.
Yeah.
And who wants to eat then, right? Like, I have this thing. I did a tour in America recently, and I just went, I had a different interviewer in every city. And I just asked them where to eat at breakfast. So I kind of changed it before I left. So I'd show up like at 9 o'clock in the morning in some obscure taco place. And they go like, they're just scratching their eyes and getting the place ready. And here I come like ready because it says they open at 9:30, although nobody does.
That's a good thing to do in America though, particularly the breakfast, you know, that you're going to get some good stuff.
Yeah. And also a lot of like places where they've got like communities, communities like, you know, like all the South American and Mexican and all that, they often those places do a great breakfast.
Yeah.
And that's where you kind of want to try. So I managed to.
In the UK, you're playing with fire breakfast wise because, you know, you're going to rock up for the best breakfast. It's going to be one of those ones on a huge platter where it's been on the front page of the Daily Mail for having 800,000 calories in it.
Yeah. I find that the more that someone boasts about how good their full English is, the worse the full English is.
Really? It's just about the size, right?
Yeah, if they go, oh, you must have heard about it. They get a B&B or something and they're like, our full English breakfast is the best. It's going to be horrendous.
I mean, unless you make your own, the beans always come from a can, no? Yeah. That's just like, how good can it get? I mean, unless you go like proper, like, you know, like you cook your own beans and do your own sourdough, but that's not an English breakfast anymore, is it?
No, exactly. Then you're talking like posh brunch places.
Yeah, that's pretentious. So, I mean, there's a limit to how good it could get. Yeah. I'm going to get cancelled for this.
I'll come down with you because I agree. I completely agree.
I was getting cancelled for saying the full English could only get so good. Your career's over. over. You're saying like light and healthy. That's what I would associate with a lot of your restaurants. And like whenever I like want something that makes me feel like I've just eaten a nice healthy meal, but delicious, I go to a lot of your places. Was that like one of your... the things you set out to do when you started opening restaurants?
No.
Great question, Joe.
Good question. Points for the question.
No, I guess the thing is, I mean, I don't think I didn't set out to do anything. Mm-hmm. In a sense, things just happen in a particular way. But then when you look back, it all makes sense. I mean, people eat more vegetables now, right? Like they want to eat more vegetables. They feel like it's the right thing to do for them, for the environment, for a whole lot of reasons. But for me, and like when Sammy and I started up Tolengi, this is we're celebrating 20 years this year.
Oh, so wow.
We started in 2002. Thank you. It was just all about what we wanted. We knew looked great, tasted great, kept well on the display, you mm-hmm. know, like all these things that look good. So it was a little bit opportunistic, but also what we ended, we loved cooking and eating back home in Jerusalem when we were growing up. It's a very vegetable focused kind of environment. So it made a lot of sense. Mm. You're both nodding at me like...
No. I'm loving it. I'm there.
Yeah. Also, I'm just thinking about... So Rovi's one of my favourite restaurants, just full stop. I love going there whenever I can. And I was just thinking about the chewy carrots.
Chewy carrots. Yeah.
How much I love the chewy carrots. But you're saying, I was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Because the chewy carrots are great.
Yeah. It's like the essence of carrots, isn't it? Because, you know, they're cooked for a long time and... I think what I try to do, and even subconsciously, is like try to really hone in on what makes that vegetable kind of come to life, whether it's mm-hmm. a carrot or a cauliflower, or even like things like Sweden turnip, you know, like they're hard nuts to crack, aren't they?
Yeah.
And when you kind of slow cook things, obviously they kind of, you distill the flavor. But also on the opposite, it's also true, I guess, if you kind of quickly char grill and you leave everything inside and then you come in with all your little tricks, you know, your salsas and the marinades and the sprinkles and all that, that also makes a huge difference.
And that sort of forms the heart of the new book, right, as well, is the little tricks.
Yeah, Extra Good Things, which comes to the Ottolenghi Test Kitchen. And it is about like wonderful condiments that you can add. Well, actually, no, you extract them from cooking rather than. So each recipe is a standalone, but it also has something, a takeaway. So you could have like a marinade or a sauce or a pickle or a sprinkle, and that you take it with you to your next meal. So essentially, you can, we say, Noor Murad, who's my co-author, we say you can Ottolenghify anything. You can Ottolenghify a roast potato, or you can Ottolenghify a plate of scrambled eggs by using all these condiments. So that is kind of it. And it came a little bit from lockdown, where we were all like struggling to cook all the time. Yeah. And then the condiments became like kings of the fridge in the kitchen. You get like those pickles and, you know, chili sauces and chili oils and things. So essentially you didn't need to cook a whole meal to get all that flavor. That's in a nutshell.
Have you always had a good instinct for what... because I always think I might have some sauces or some things left over from other dishes I've had. And then I get a real bright idea that I'm going to put it with the thing I've just made. And because I don't have very good instincts, there's pretty much always a bad combination. And I haven't really thought it through.
Tell us about a few of them.
Yeah, I'm going to need an example of this.
Well, I just... So what's a good example of stuff? A lot of the time, it's if I get a takeaway... Mm. And I might like serve myself up whatever from the pot, and I'll leave a lot of the sauce in there. Maybe from the if I got all the chunks of chicken and some sauce there, but then I've left behind the curry sauce. And then the next day, I'm like, oh, I've got this this other thing I'm making. I'm going to chuck that curry sauce in the bolognese. Let's see what that's like. Real bad.
Yeah, I think enough said, right?
Yeah.
But I think I don't think that's in the book. I'm fairly sure, having had a very quick look, very excited to cook from it, but it's not, you're not cooking a curry and then going, strain the sauce out and pour it all over your pudding or whatever. It's not.
Which is maybe,
you know, curry, actually, that's very important.
No, I was immediately drawn to the blooming leeks.
The blooming leeks, yeah.
Because I love blooming onion. Every time I go to the States, I have a blooming onion. But blooming
and
leeks.
And the blooming onion, just technically, Noor was working on it for a while and it just didn't work. And then I said to her, well, why don't you do the leeks? They ended up looking like octopus, you know, like they're spread out like that. And then with a batter, you fry them and they taste absolutely delicious.
They look amazing.
No, I mean, so I guess the sauces or the takeouts are some things that... So we we kind of spent quite a lot of time thinking what goes with what. So we go like, there's this, I'm actually looking through the book, so there's these sections at the beginning, like with eggs, so you've got fresh chili sauce, hot sauce, cortado, and Colby butter, Duca, and all those things. So there's a whole list of condiments that you can put on your egg. So essentially, once you've cooked the dish and you've got that little jar on the side, you can go to those opening pages and decide what you want to use it for.
It's such a clever concept that I've not seen before. I think it's like, and it's rare to find a cookbook that's like an actual new concept.
I think we didn't really have a concept in the sense that we were looking for a long time to tell the story of the Ottolenghi Test Kitchen, which we love spending time in, and all the dynamics of what's going on there and the skills that we're developing. And then the pandemic hit and we realized actually that's the solution, because all of a sudden it was about, you know, for the first Test Kitchen book was called Shelf Love, and it was about using up ingredients that you happen to have in your cupboards, you know, barley and chickpeas and polenta and all that stuff that just sits there and you never touch it, so you go and buy yourself a fillet of cod or something.
Yeah.
and this book is all about the condiments. How do you can create huge flavors for cooking that, it, as I said, save you from cooking from scratch every single day, which is kind of a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah.
three times a day.
But that ingredient thing as well, like, it's whenever I'll be like, I'm going to cook something, and then it might be polenta in the dish or a spice that I don't have. I'm like, right, I'm going to go and do a big shop and buy all of these things. And now I just know, I'm just like, right, I'm going to use that. I'm going to put that up there. Never using that again.
Yeah.
So
bye-bye forever. See you at the back of the car.
Until I move house.
Yeah.
And then weirdly, I'm going to make the decision to take you with me again.
Even though it's expired already, like 3 months ago, there's no reason to.
I need a recipe that involves a lot of soy sauce.
Yeah.
Because like every time I get a takeaway sushi, which I do quite a bit actually, there's not a box you can tick on Deliveroo that says please don't send another pot of soy sauce.
I think you should bring it up with Deliveroo, because I do agree there's too much soy sauce sometimes with all this, like every sushi delivery gets like, and you do get stuck with quite a lot.
Well, also I worry that's because I order so much sushi, they assume there's maybe 10 to 12 people there and you're having like a sushi party, because they also send like 8 pairs of chopsticks and you're like, no, that was for me, unfortunately.
They assume Ed runs a sushi restaurant.
I run a sushi restaurant that makes no profit whatsoever, because I just order it from another sushi restaurant.
So I think there's actually a solution to all your little sushis, all your little soy sauce bottles. And that is that you can almost throw it into almost anything that needs long, any stew or any, even if you make like a pasta sauce, a meaty pasta sauce, like a ragu style, you put some soy sauce in that and you get all that umami and you didn't throw it away. And it's so basic, you know, like people sometimes use stock cubes, right, to get all this kind of MSG flavor, umami. Soy does the same.
Yeah.
Then you just throw it in there and you'll get the flavor.
Great.
Oh, amazing.
Well, that's what I'll do.
There you go. Yeah.
I'll do that.
Problem solved.
Yeah, yeah. This is great. I can't wait to cook a stew now. Also, just because you were talking about leeks earlier, the leeks at Rovi with the pecorino.
Oh, yeah?
One of my favourite things. Last time I went there, wasn't on the menu. Right, yeah. So if it could ever work.
You know, there is something about changing menus, like... chefs love to change menus and customers don't like changing menus. Like where their wills collide. Like I go to the chefs in my restaurants, we have these conversations often about menus. They go like, oh, this was on the menu for like 3 weeks already. It's so boring. I said, like, who goes into one restaurant more than twice in 3 weeks? Like, you know, what are the chances that someone will try that again? And in reality, it is a bit of an issue, because I think sometimes things that should stay longer and are kind of a classic in the customer's eye is not really for the chefs. The chef want to kind of push again. And in my restaurant, in our restaurant, I should say, the chefs have like creative freedom to do those things. I mean, Rovi, Neil, does an amazing job and he loves to change the menu all the time. And we had that, like when we just opened Rovi, which was about 5 years ago, we had these corn ribs on the menu. You know what they are, right? Like, so it's like just for the audience, for the listeners. You take a whole corn cob and you cut it in lengthways through the core twice. So you get like quartered, but lengthways. And then when you deep fry them, they kind of bend and they turn into what looks like a rib. And we put it on our menu when we just started. It had like some kind of seaweed butter. It was, and neither Neil or I invented it. I saw it and from Momofuku. They were doing it in New York at the time. David Chang, not him, but one of his chefs. So I just said, like, you know, let's do it. And it became a huge hit. And then later on in the year, it was like October and the corn was not that nice anymore. So we took it off the menu. And people just call to cancel their reservations. They go like, we heard the corn is not on. So, okay, so I'm going to cancel my booking. I go like, this is mad. Like, you're literally not going to give us a chance just because we don't have the corn. Yeah.
We don't believe you could do it again.
Yeah,
with a different dish.
And now the corn ribs are everywhere, right?
I was making those all the way through lockdown at home.
Yeah.
Cool. I was just chopping up corn.
It's hard, isn't it?
I was burning myself all the time, sure. all the oil spitting all over me, but it was worth it every time.
But seriously, it has become phenomenally popular within a very short amount of time, to the extent that I've seen it on Sainsbury's ads.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Big
yes.
stations, you know, they've taken that. They always follow the trend and put the things on. Like, you know, you kind of, something has become completely commonplace once Sainsbury's is put on one of these big ads in train stations.
And they look beautiful as well.
They look great.
Would you say the celeriac shawarma is one of those dishes now at Rovi? If you took that off, people would...
Yeah, celeriac shawarma is definitely something that we can't take off. There, and also that we've got like the Jerusalem mixed grill. And I remember when we did the celeriac shawarma, we wanted to do that when Neil was working in the test kitchen, working on the menu. And we thought, like, we need a, you know, it's a vegetable, really. It's a kind of a vegetable restaurant, or at least mostly vegetables. And we want to get that kind of these kind of intense flavors of the shawarma. So each person kind of added something. We cooked it slowly. We added the spices. And the kind of the killer ingredient was something called bakela, which is a North African Tunisian mostly condiment, which involves spinach or chard cooked for a very, very long time in olive oil. Like, I'm talking like hours, until it becomes black and it becomes kind of like the essence of spinach.
Oh, wow.
And it's traditional. They used to have that like in jars on the side of the cooker. Like, that would be the condiment of choice. Mm-hmm. So when we added that to the sour cream and the chili sauce, etc., it just kind of turned everything around. We had like all the components that we needed. And I'm just mentioning that because it's just this whole notion that goes back to Extra Good Things. I'm not doing it to sell the book, but I'm just saying cultures have a condiment, you know, like we have mayonnaise and ketchup that we have buy from Hellman's, but actually they used to have like homemade condiments that were always there, even before refrigeration. Like, that's like what sauerkraut is all about, or kimchi. And that is the flavor of the culture, you know, that's the thing that they put in, and it's like always there, it keeps, and it's like, it's so flavorsome.
We always start with still or sparkling water.
Oh, I always have sparkling water. I almost can't drink still water. I do.
Really?
But I love sparkling water. I get it from my dad. Like, in the old days, so I'm in my 50s, so you can imagine how far we go. He used to have that siphon thing, like, you know, like with...
with a little tap on it?
With a little bottle. You get these tiny little metal siphon bottles of gas, and you'd put them on, and then you...
Oh, okay,
like, for whipped cream. So we had that at home, and my dad as well, and I'm the same. Like, he would only drink sparkling water. He would rather, like, go to the desert, no water, parched, but he'd have sparkling water. It was just his thing. And here I go, get still water from you guys.
We don't even offer it in real life in the studio. So even first thing in the morning?
I don't drink first thing in the morning, but I do love sparkling water. Yeah, that's like just the thing. It just feels alive. I know some people say, even on your show, people said, oh, it's got this kind of not a water flavor, right? Like, it doesn't taste like pure water. I don't have that problem. I just like to drink sparkling water.
What does still water taste like to you?
It's like, you know, before you get your first electric toothbrush, and then you get you have to go back to manual toothbrush, and it just doesn't do the thing.
That's the difference.
That's so funny. Like, particularly potent for me, because I went away for the weekend and I didn't take my electric, so I had to buy a manual.
How was that?
Well, it was like I was going back to still water.
awful, isn't it? You just feel like you just haven't even cleaned your teeth. Yeah, yeah, what's the point in this?
And so why doesn't my hand vibrate up and down?
And yet my mouth is bleeding.
It doesn't do the thing, does it?
No.
It just doesn't do it.
You need the thing. And I like the electric toothbrush tells me when to move on to the next bit. When it goes...
Yeah.
Time to move on.
That's good. Yeah, no. Well, then that makes sense now. Maybe now that's it. I'm just going to have sparkling water forever. I'll just feel...
Well, you had a similar thing with Coke, of course.
I did have a similar thing with Coke.
What was it?
Well, I used to drink, you know, Coca-Cola and whatnot, and then I quit caffeine completely. And for 5 years, just didn't drink anything with any caffeine in it at all. And then after those 5 years, I started drinking Diet Coke. And actually now, because it's been so long since I've had a normal full-fat Coke, Diet Coke just tastes like full-fat Coca-Cola.
Perfect.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good story.
It's another good story from you.
It's a pretty good story from me.
Yeah. And you did need to take a long break, though. Those were hard times, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I think if I was taking that break, knowing that what I was trying to achieve was to make Diet Coke taste like Coca-Cola, it would have been harder.
Yeah.
To do the 5 year break. Yeah. But as it was, I was like, you know, I just want to stop drinking caffeine for a bit because it's staining my teeth too much, is what my dentist told me.
Oh, really? So you did it for your teeth.
Yeah, yeah. My dentist was like, you've got to stop this. But also, I accidentally gave it up because we ran out of, like, coffee and tea in the house. And I just, like...
For 5 years?
For a month. Right. And I just didn't bother replacing it. And then I realised, oh, I've gone a month without having it. So I thought, in for a penny.
So you're drinking so much Coke that your dentist had to... Stop.
Not Coke. It was cups of tea.
Oh, right.
Cups of tea all the time. And she was like, just stop this.
What about the red wine? Did you give up the red wine? Because that's supposed to, have that same effect, right?
I don't really drink red wine that much. So luckily, it wasn't as much of an issue. So whenever I did have that was okay. But, you know, also like, you know, obviously curries. We talked about the takeaway curry.
Turmeric, big old
stainers. Oh, man. Turmeric. Don't even get me started on turmeric, man. The other day... I was really giving myself a hard time, being like, you're so unhealthy, James. You need to start eating healthier. And I was like, I'm going to go into this shop and get something healthy. Got a turmeric shot.
Yeah.
Great. This is the new me. I drank the turmeric shot all the way down.
Yeah.
Glug, glug, glug. And I completely drained it. And then I went to put the lid back on the turmeric shot bottle. Fumbled it.
Yeah.
The empty bottle goes down. Bounces off the pavement and all the excess turmeric sprays up my leg and completely stains my trousers yellow and I look like a jackass. So that's what you get for trying to do something
good. That jumper used to be white.
Yeah, I'm wearing a yellow jumper for the
turmeric listener. I just say he's wearing a turmeric coloured jumper.
Exactly. That's what happened to me.
You turmeric proofed your jumper.
Yeah. That's all I can wear now is turmeric coloured stuff so that I don't get punked again. Never try and do a good thing.
That's going to be the worst stain, right? Turmeric's got to be the most staining spice.
It does not come
spice.
Off, yeah. Turmeric is bad. I think, beetroot famously doesn't really come off, and pomegranate. Like, we used to have pomegranates, and I've told this story before, but my mom would, and I had a younger brother, she would make us go naked to the garden to eat our pomegranates. I mean, just imagine that, ages like 5 and 3, we'd go out to the garden with pomegranates, eat them, come back to the house.
That's sensible. That's just sensible. That's good sort of economy of staying.
But it's a good image, isn't it?
Like, yeah, to be completely naked. I think I'd at least want to buy some pomegranate pants.
Yeah.
I'll be like, just at least buy me some pomegranate-coloured pants, Mum.
Yeah.
So that I can have them for my pomegranate garden trips.
It would make you think twice about wanting a pomegranate as well, though, wouldn't it? You'd be like, I want a pomegranate, but I want to keep my clothes on.
Yeah. I mean, these days, you know, often you buy a pomegranate already, like, the seeds taken out in a little tub in the supermarket. That's pretty safe.
Yeah. If anyone's, you know, wanting to, like, look for some sort of new diet fad, it might be good to be like, the rule is every time you want to eat something, you have to eat it naked in the garden. And people would consider, how much do I want this?
Yeah,
actually, yes, it's true. And you don't always want to join them, do you?
No.
Necessarily. I mean, people would be eating on their own a lot.
Yeah, in the garden, most people naked alone.
Yeah. Pom-doms or bread? Pom-doms or bread? Yo, tabata dengi? Pom-doms or bread?
I didn't know that was. I was going to ask this question. Of course, bread. Who eats pom-doms?
Well, a few people have chosen pom-doms in the past.
Yeah, they're pretty popular, yeah.
Or sometimes just whatever.
You have to grow up in this country to choose pom-dom to bread.
I guess so. I guess it's.
Maybe when bread was absolutely dreadful and anything like with a bit of texture that you could get would be pom-doms, then that's in the second time I slag off the local cuisine. I don't know, but this is like, oh God. No, I get them, but they are just like something you have once in a while and you go for to an Indian restaurant. Sure. I mean, bread is just, there's such a range of options.
Yeah.
Would that be a dream bread you would have for your dream meal?
Well, I'm going to be very predictable. I do love a really, really good sourdough bread with all the thing. And the people have slagged it off recently and said, oh, sourdough is full of holes. You can't put any spreads on it. It's not practical and it's poncy and all the rest. I think it just has so much flavor and like really, really good ones. Mm-hmm. I'll give a shout out to the Dusty Knuckle that we get our sourdough bread from, and I just love how sour it is, and I just love that sour flavor.
I guess it's so widespread now, the sourdough thing. I think that's, you know, it's just the nature of success that, you know, people are going to start turning against it.
Or some backlash.
Yeah, there's always backlash.
Backlash, I'm fine. Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't want too many tall poppies around. I mean, look, sourdough's had its day. Now we can
Take it down a notch or two. But it's also still enjoy
white bread.
Yeah.
White sliced supermarket bread.
The Dusty Knuckle, man. They've got a van that they drive around.
That's right.
And enough people on your road have to ask them to come to your road.
Oh, really?
And they wouldn't come to our road.
Really? Did you,
people
you
ask?
A lot of people ask, but I think it might just be outside their area. So, but yeah, there was a big chat on the road WhatsApp group about it. They're like, we've really been trying to get the Dusty Knuckle to come by.
Wow,
and they wouldn't come by.
That's a very specific type of WhatsApp group. Everyone's like, we really need to get the Dusty Knuckle.
Yeah, also tells a lot about the street.
Yeah, it does.
Absolutely. Most of our like, you know, street WhatsApp groups and stuff like, guys, we need to sort out this problem with the bin men. It's really bad. Is anyone else having problems with the music from the local pub at night? It's too loud. Guys, we haven't got enough sourdough being delivered straight into our doors, specifically from the Dusty Knuckle.
To be fair, most of the rest of the time, it's shots from people's Ring doorbells going like, were these the people who scratched the car? Like, people really angry about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's good.
Imagine if the Dusty Knuckle drove down and scratched all the cars.
Oh, my God.
That would be a problem, right? Wouldn't it?
But it's good sourdough,
I mean,
you want
sourdough or you want nice cars? I mean, it's like... You go sourdough, right?
Some sourdough loaves you could scratch a bloody car with.
Yeah, I don't. Just, you
know, there we go. Sourdough haters again.
I love the stuff.
Do you want a lovely sourdough from Dusty Knuckle? Would you like some butter with that? Do you want some olive oil?
Yeah, butter or olive oil. I prefer butter to spread on the bread, but then olive oil to cook with. Mm-hmm. And I also love the combination of butter and olive oil. So if you some things are just nice when you have both. So you start off with olive oil. And then when you get a little bit more body, you add butter, and it's like, it's nice together. You don't
have to choose.
When cooking. Yes, but for the Dusty Knuckle sourdough, I'll have butter.
Mm. Lovely. With some salt in the butter?
Yes, salt and butter. But not any of that whipped butter business.
It's
just so pointless in my
really?
Eye. Yeah. I whipped butter, I just don't get it. Like, what's the point of, like... When it's at room temperature, it's the perfect texture. And when you whip it up, it's not the perfect texture for butter. It's good for whipped cream, but it's not good for butter. It's
maybe
just
I've fallen
light.
For this. Maybe I've been duped here because I get excited when I see whipped butter.
No.
I guess I couldn't tell you why, so maybe I'm just I've been tricked.
I think if you'd given us a slice of sourdough, your favorite bread, right?
Yeah.
With whipped as opposed to just normal, really good salted butter, I think, like, in a blind tasting, you'd prefer the proper normal butter.
I like just normal, just thick. Spread it on thick.
Right. Ed likes getting each bite. He breaks the bread up into bits and he butters each individual bit and then eats it.
You want to make sure you have enough butter there.
Yeah.
From every side.
Yeah, exactly. Everything needs to be covered in butter.
Yeah.
I just never understand it when, and most people do this, I think, at a restaurant, you get a big bit of bread and then they literally butter the whole thing and then eat it like a whole bit. No, I want to break it up with my hands and put a little bit of butter on.
You want to feel it. You want to feel it. I get that. Yeah, it's fine. Everything is okay.
Hey, I'm not trying to get him in trouble here.
So why did you bring it up?
Your dream starter.
So, yeah, I was actually thinking about that before I came here. And I went for my my grandmother. My grandmother on my father's side, she was Italian. She was actually, they came to Israel just before the Second World War. But they just felt like they've never left Italy. You know, like they kept on eating and living that kind of life, even though it was really not the right environment for it. And she used to make semolina gnocchi, which is essentially is like cooked, cook down semolina, and then you kind of like cookies, you cut circles with when you spread it out, and then you put those slightly overlapping on a tray, and you put butter on it and some cheese, parmesan, and maybe another cheese, slightly maybe bluish cheese like a gorgonzola, but essentially it's parmesan semolina under the grill, so it's like pure melted cheese sensation. And she used to you like the idea, right?
I'm going somewhere. I'm visualizing all of this and it's going along.
Yeah. So, and I think maybe a grating of nutmeg, nutmeg as well. Oh, and that's it, like cheese, nutmeg, semolina. It's just so comforting. It's like pure comforting. There's no challenge in that dish. It's like the opposite of sourdough. It's like so soft.
Soft and warming.
And, yeah. And yeah, you don't need anything else. So for a very long time, I tried to make it like she does. And I really don't think I've managed. In one of my books, there is a recipe for it, which I think is pretty good, but it's just not as good as the way she used to do it.
Yeah, what is that when, you know, because you would have thought you'd be able to capture all of the it sounds like relatively simple. Like, it's and cheese and a bit of nutmeg.
It's super simple.
So you should be able to recreate it perfectly, but it's just whether it's the environment or the way you remember it tasting or
I think your mind plays tricks on you, right? Like, so it's like having something on holiday and then coming home and say, I'm going to make that. It's just going to be so good. And then it's just never really good, is it?
Or even buying a bottle of booze from holiday. Like you have a wine, you know.
All these Araks and Rakis and stuff. Yeah. You have them like in Turkey and then you come back and it's just like awful. It's like you have to have it with all the oily food and everything. And like the whole environment needs to be specific. And then you have it here and you go, I'll have a little shot. And it's just like, oh, it just burns your throat.
Because also you're just not relaxed like you are on holiday. You're not sitting in the sun and then taste it at home in winter in the UK. And like, God, it's so sad.
Also, I think I often find if someone tells me, this dish is amazing, you've got to have this, it's so good.
Yeah.
I try not to say that to people about things that I like. I might order the dish that I think is the best on the menu, but I'll try my best not to tell them this is the best.
So
I
keep like a poker face. They don't know what you're feeling, whether you're hating it or loving it.
Yeah, well, I just don't want them... I want them to really enjoy the dish as much as I do, but I don't want... I feel like if I amp it up and go, this is so amazing, you've got to have this, it's so good, then they might be like, that's all right, it's pretty good, but like, you got me ready for the best thing in my life.
But you know you do that on this podcast every single week to millions of people.
Yes, and I worry that gives me anxiety.
Yeah,
I worry that everyone's going to these places going, ah.
So even today you've mentioned about three dishes at Rovi.
Yeah, so I'm worried people are going to go to Rovi now and go,
that
what's
gives me anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're worried about it.
I mean, that you can build up expectations, and I often think it's like with everything, like with books and films and all that, you build up the expectations. Mm. You want to build enough expectations to get people to go and watch it or try it, but not too much so they are bound to be disappointed. I mean, it's just food at the end of the day. I mean, it's not like, and that's coming from me, but you can build up your expectations so much that you're going to kind of go like, oh, really?
There's a dish that I want Ed to try somewhere in the country.
But you're not even going to give me any details about where.
No. But
go find it.
Somewhere in the country, right?
And I'll sort it out one day that Ed will try it.
Okay.
And I know in my mind, he will love it. It'll become his new favourite thing. But
you don't want
I
to
have
build
to
it up.
Not ramp it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that would be huge if you told me this is your new favourite thing.
It's your new favourite thing. Yeah.
And what if you just said that you... What if you do the reverse psychology and just tell him it's just awful?
Then I'd worry that I'd be too good at that and that I'd get it in his head that it's disgusting.
Yeah. And then you'll
Ed, it was delicious, please.
But also, I'm quite contrary, so I'd probably eat that and go, you're wrong.
Yeah. Fair.
So it might work.
Yeah, it could work.
Do you want to narrow it down geographically for me?
North.
Okay, cool.
North of where?
Yeah, good point.
North of the river. Yes. Thames. North of the river Thames.
Yes, north of the river Thames. Yeah. North of a few rivers.
Is it Manchester?
Yes.
Is it the French?
Yes.
Yes. He's obsessed with this place. You've probably even told me about the dish before.
Yeah, it was my phone background for a while. He would have seen it.
So what is it?
What was the dish?
Come on, you can tell us.
Yeah.
Amongst friends.
Okay. Benito, you got to edit this out.
No.
This is a big moment.
Yeah, but you can't edit out you recommending a dish on a food podcast.
Well, it's because it will...
Do you think it's going to blow up the spot?
The listeners... It won't blow up the spot, but the listeners will be like, this makes no sense with the man we know.
Oh, it's cheese-based.
Yes. It's the cheese course at the French. It's one of my favourite dishes in the entire world.
Oh my goodness!
It's the cheese course. So it's just cheese. It's cheese selection.
So it's between. It's going from the savouries to the desserts is where it sits in the menu, and it's a drunken prune, slice of St. James's cheese on top of that, a walnut cracker, and a scoop of honeycomb. It's this bite.
Wow.
And it's incredible.
I don't think that's surprising. I don't think listeners will be annoyed about that. That sounds like the way you should be consuming cheese.
With a scoop of honeycomb on top of it.
Because you're famous for not liking cheese.
Yeah, he gets angry if people pick cheese.
Because he's a cheese board.
I'll quickly adjust my selection.
I like cheese, but not for a dessert. When people say a cheese board for dessert, I flip my lid.
No, I get that, because you're so cheated if you get a cheese board for dessert, because dessert is dessert, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Well, I enjoy it. Now and again, I'll get the cheese board.
But then you have to have dessert.
Well, yeah, quite often I will also have dessert, but if I'm eating dinner with James and I feel like annoying him, I'll get a cheese board instead of dessert.
But I went back to the French and they did that course. But they said they switched the prune for something else. I think it was like a jam kind of thing, a jelly. And they switched the cheese for a different type of cheese, but it was still
good.
Amazing. So that's why I want to get Ed there to have that bite, because I'm pretty sure it'll be up his street. But now I picked it up. He knows about it. And now I dread.
I'll love it still.
Yeah, I think your feet will love it.
Yeah, I think from the way you describe it, I think it's good enough to stand even that terrible test of you picking it up, him dreaming about it all night, waking in the morning, making the train he doesn't want to take to Manchester, going there, eating it, and loving it.
Yeah.
I went out for dinner the other night at Rules. James wasn't there, but I had cheese for dessert.
Oh,
I had Stilton. They bring the big Stilton.
Oh, yeah.
And scoop it out. And there's a picture of me while they're scooping the Stilton out, and I look like a little child getting his favourite toy. So excited.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
Well, that's like a lovely starter. Mm. A ratatouille starter. Back to the childhood.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that it's very it's back to childhood. I went for childhood things, because I thought, in some ways, like, because I'm constantly surrounded by food, you know, with the restaurants and the book, I feel like I've touched on so many things that I don't want to choose from any of those. I want to go back to the initial old experience of food, like before it was a profession.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today's episode of Off Menu is sponsored by Aura. James, are you ready to win Mother's Day?
I am, Ed. I want to cement my reputation as the best gift giver in the family. I'm going to give my mom an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
May I say, James, I absolutely love the class and elegance with which you use the word mom, because this is for US listeners.
All of your moms deserve a good Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
Yeah, I think your mum's going to love looking back on your childhood memories, seeing what you're up to today, seeing what you were up to back in the day, and even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving, James.
Ed, answer me this. Who is the best gift giver in your life?
I'd probably say my wife is a very good gift giver. Not that my mom is not a fantastic gift giver, but my wife's very good at little surprise things. She says, I've only got you a few things, and then there'll be little surprises, things that we've seen throughout the rest of the year. I'll say to my wife, I like that, and then I forget about it, and then on the day, there's some lovely little gifts there for me that remind us of the year that we've just spent together.
Oh, if you like being reminded of stuff, may I suggest photographs?
That's a very good point, James. I think we should get ourselves an Aura digital picture frame and put some of our wedding photos on them.
Right now, Ed, Aura has a great deal for Mom's Day, Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code OFFMENU at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Is your main course also from a similar...
Yeah. My main course is also from a similar... Do you want me to reveal it?
I would love it. I also, one of my favourite main courses I've ever had, another shout out to you, I was on Sunday brunch.
Oh, yeah.
And one of your chefs was there via Zoom, so it wasn't like... I can't remember her name, it was quite a few years ago.
Easter?
It might have been. It was a lasagna, but with prawns in it.
I think it might have been Easter, yeah.
Incredible. Definitely the best... I've ever eaten on Sunday brunch.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
So you were there.
I was there in the studio and we got to try this prawn lasagna.
Cool.
And I completely, normally you just have a bite and then you move on to the next thing. I completely finished it and then polished off anyone else's who hadn't finished their prawn lasagna. So I was like, that was one of the best things I've ever had.
It's a really good sign when people keep on eating and coming back.
Do you know the exact dish I'm talking
about? Yes, I do know it.
So
I
good.
Do know it.
Where can I get that?
You could make it if you... I think... No? You should have told me. I would have brought
a prawn lasagna in your backpack.
Through Borough Market with my prawn lasagna.
Which book is it in? I don't
think it's in a book. I think it's in one of my Guardian columns. I'll have to have a look at it.
I'm sure we can dig out a recipe.
We can dig it out.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, we can dig it out.
My word.
I'll make it for you.
Thank you, Ed.
I want to do some cooking.
Yeah. You can cook the prawn lasagna.
Yeah.
And okay, we'll get Simon Rimmer and Tim Lovejoy to stand there as well.
Nope.
So that I feel like I'm back in Sunday Bunch.
Nope. I'd like a nice relaxing meal, please.
The dream main course.
So the main course. So I went for something, again, it's not a restaurant food. It's a shawarma in pita, which I love, you know. So I need to explain it a little bit. So, you know, there's so many versions of the, you know, the doner kebab and the shawarmas and stuff. And they're all, for me, they're all good. But they rely, well, it has to be, the real thing that is really important is the side dish, my side dish, and that's the chips. So when I was growing up in Jerusalem, we used to go to, there was a bunch of places. And what they all had in common is these big shawarmas, rotisserie things. Mm-hmm. And you'd have a lamb one and a chicken or turkey one. So that would depend. And they were full of fat, like kind of literally as you cut through, there's all this extra fat added there. And they'd put it in a fluffy pita for you. And you'd get like those kind of really thinly shaved. You know, you can get like they saw it off like really, really thinly and expertly. And then you get a layer of that. You get salad. You can get some fried aubergines on top as well. Tahini and pickles is a kind of, you can go for pickle or not. But I always love some pickles like cucumbers or... You know those turnip that are pickled in beetroot liquid?
Yeah.
So there's these purple ones. And then lots of fries, like chips inside.
Yeah.
And extra tahini. Oh my God, that is just the best thing in the world. And it at the bottom of the pita, if it doesn't go all over, you know, seeps through to your shoes, which is a kind of professional hazard.
It happens. Yeah.
You've got all these juices there and they're just so good. You know, the fat, the tahini, the salad juices, etc. It's just, and then it hits the bread. It's so good.
I mean, it's difficult to argue with that being the best. That is just so up my street. That's
yeah.
So
would you, because we all want to eat these kind of things, right? Mm. Like this is just, and to be honest, I'm not so picky. So, for instance, in Turkey, the doner would not have tahini, but would have some kind of yogurt-based sauce or yogurt garlic-based sauce. That's also fine. You know, I'm not a purist when it comes to these things. And I do prefer the chicken one with all the extra fat to the lamb/beef one because it's not that dominant and all the other things can come through, but I'm very happy with the lamb one as well. So, yeah, you can just...
I'll go chicken usually.
You can pick. But the spicing is important. So there's shawarma spice mix for me has to have some a kind of a combination, a balance of the kind of more savory spices, obviously cumin, some heat, and then a bit of sweet, like what comes from allspice or cinnamon or maybe cardamom I wouldn't necessarily put there, but some of those more sweet spices, mm-hmm. and often it would have fenugreek as well. So you get that kind of wonderful balanced spices there as well.
I'm glad you considered cardamom and then got rid of it. Because
you don't like cardamom.
I hate that stuff.
No, yeah. I love cardamom, but not for that. So you wouldn't have it in any...
No, I'd probably have it if it was like part of a spice mix, or it wasn't a dominant flavour, but as a dominant flavour...
So you would never get those like buns?
I was in Copenhagen this weekend.
Okay.
And I always try, because I know they're so popular. So I've flown into Copenhagen in the morning. My wife was already there, because we were going to a wedding that day, and I flew in early in the morning. Arrived in Copenhagen, had a nap in the hotel. Then I woke up after 20 minutes into my nap and she was eating a cardamom bun and I went, just bring it here. Had a big bite out of it. Went, no, still hate it, and went back to sleep again.
I'm a great guy.
He
told me a story earlier about being asleep in his... being on tour, his tour manager driving him. him being asleep in the car. Him waking up and the tour manager going, this is my hometown we're driving through now. And I went, absolute shithole. And then went to sleep.
Maybe they like fun. Do they eat cardamom in those?
It's a very sort of Scandinavian town in North Wales. Cardamom. I don't know what it is. It's just the flavour. It's just, and I like most things, and those buns are everywhere.
You have the gene. Yeah. So Arabic coffee almost often has cardamom infused or ground with the coffee grounds. Mm. So you have that sweetness, coffee flavour. And I just think that is just absolutely delicious. But if someone tells you they hate that flavor, then what can you do about it? Nothing.
I know this. I'm reading a book at the minute about coffee.
What?
About the Monk of Mocha, it's called. And
have you heard of this book, Yota?
No, but I'm curious.
It's a Dave Eggers book. It's based on a real man's life.
Oh, cool.
And he's trying to get a coffee business off the ground.
And where does the cardamom come in? So you read about this practice.
Yeah, so loads of the book is just about coffee. So, I've got 2% storyline and 98% the history of coffee and how coffee is
made.
Which
is great, isn't it?
I mean, how much I've actually retained. Please don't test me on any of it.
I shall not, but you did retain the cardamom.
Yeah. Yes, I remember that. But now I'm thinking to myself, what country does the book even take place in? Because I know he starts off in San Francisco and then he goes somewhere else. And I'm thinking...
Yeah, do share.
He goes... I think
for the rest of us.
I think he goes to
Uzbekistan.
No, should we start suggesting countries?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it a sort of coffee place?
Yeah, big coffee place.
Colombia,
Guatemala,
Ethiopia.
The problem with it is that they're big coffee. Like coffee Kenya. Was almost invented there, but then they've fallen behind. And he wants to bring them back into the coffee game because people have forgotten that some of the best coffee originally came from that country.
It's an island? Is it like Caribbean island? It's sort of off the coast of Africa.
No.
This, James, this is not good stuff, man.
Huh?
This is not good stuff.
This is great. It's about to then be on. And we're playing a guessing game about the book I'm reading. This is good.
It will actually push the readers to go and read it because they will want to know the answers. So, exactly. Listeners would go like...
Well, I'll Google it on my phone.
No. We'll just leave it.
No, this is really important.
Yeah, Google it on your phone.
Because otherwise...
I've got all day.
It's certainly very important to Yotam that you find this out.
No, I want to know what that country is because I want to add it to my repertoire of anecdotes.
Have you heard of the Yemen?
Oh, yeah, the Yemen. I have heard of the Yemen. That is a really good point because Yemen does have a history of coffee. I know that little bit. Maybe they used to add cardamom because Yemen is in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. We'll have to find that out.
Yes, I think that there's something big is about to happen in the book.
You're obviously very engaged.
He's about to...
Is he going to spill a coffee?
He might spill a coffee. Maybe. Maybe he will spill a coffee in the book.
This book sounds good. I'm going to...
You're going to... It sounds...
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do, Yotam. I'll buy the book and then I'll pop it on my pile of books and then I'll never read it.
Yes. There's so many books to read, isn't there? It's such a problem.
Too many.
It's just a lot. I've got a lot of books that I want to read and the people ask, what are you reading? And essentially, there's so many books that you just end up...
None of them.
That's the problem.
Apart from the cookbooks, am I right?
Apart from the cookbooks.
I genuinely read cookbooks like novels, though.
Do you?
I will. When I get a new cookbook, I will just sort of sit and
but
read
it. But you don't read like half a teaspoon of salt?
No. But I mean, like, when I say read,
spoilers.
I look at the page.
Come on, Matt. I've read this yet.
I haven't got to that bit yet.
Half a teaspoon of salt.
How do you even measure half a teaspoon?
Oh, don't get me started on that. People want to know how much of everything. I have recipes with an eighth of a teaspoon. I just let you know here. I'm saying it. I'm getting it out there.
Yeah.
Yes, even an eighth of a teaspoon is a thing. A quarter is a lot. It makes all the difference. No, there is a reason why we write those things down, because often we do have conversations like in the test kitchen. There's a lot of long-winded conversations. Often we can't decide between a quarter, and because a pinch means nothing. So, you know, whether you want a little bit less than a quarter, but it still needs a little bit of extra salt. So the eighth comes into the conversation. And I always say to people, why do you give me so much detail? And you're like, you don't need to follow the recipe exactly, but I want people to get as close as possible to what happened in the room. Mm-hmm. If they follow it like a set of instructions, like they were robots. I know most people don't cook like that, but at least there's something... It's like the newspaper of record. Like everything is there, it's there, and you can follow it or not. And some people love that idea, and they go like, "These are no foolproof recipes because I followed it and I created an amazing meal." So it works for some.
But then, you do that the first. That's what I would do the first time, and then if I did it again, you've got the basis of it, and you sort of like add things or take things away.
And it's also true about like sometimes I think like as a culture we love to kind of almost try new things all the time, almost too much. And people come and often say to me, like, you know, I find it quite stressful because I haven't yet mastered Burmese cuisine, you know, like something like, but I'm really making my way through Thai and, you know, and I find it could be quite, people get themselves into a rut over like having like this incredible repertoires. But Nigella always talks about the repetition, right? Like the repetition is so important because it's comforting.
Yeah.
When you cook something over and over again, it's comforting. And we don't want to take the comfort away from cooking, do we? We don't want to bring all that stress in because, especially in the last few years, I found so much comfort in cooking because there's so little comfort out there,
yeah,
right? Like with all the horrible things that are happening.
Especially the repetition of cooking the same thing over and over again in the last few years.
Well, you're the king of it.
Chorizo broccoli pasta. Shout out.
Chorizo broccoli pasta.
Chorizo broccoli pasta. That's my the dish that I've made the most in my lifetime, and made it all exclusively during lockdown over and over again.
Did you find comfort in it?
Beyond what you can possibly imagine. The highest levels of comfort. It's my happy place all the time, every time I think of it.
And still, you still make it now, right?
Well, made it a couple of times since the lockdowns have everything's opened up, and it feels weird.
Oh, really?
It feels weird to me.
What kind of chorizo do you use? Do you use a soft chorizo or...
No, not soft.
The cooked chorizo, the slices, the salami style.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, not the salami.
No. You use
the whole...
Yeah, it's in the sausage.
Yeah, I chop it up.
I chop it up still.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's hard. It's not like...
No one was suggesting you drop the whole sausage into some pasta.
You chop it up. Tell us how you make it. I mean, maybe you've spoken about it on the show already.
No, this is good. Chop up the chorizo. Chop up the broccoli stems, but not the heads. The heads don't go in. Okay. So that's what we did it because we were like having broccoli in the house and we'd have the stems left over.
The stems are so good. Yeah. They're so
sweet.
So we
were like, we need to use these stems for something. We learnt this recipe, use the stems, and now we're buying broccoli to make that. So now, it used to be we don't know what to do with the stems. Now we're like, we don't know what to do with the heads.
Oh my goodness. That is a brain fuck.
Chop the stems up. Chop up some garlic, some chili.
Garlic chili.
Yeah.
Put the chorizo in for a bit on its own. After a few minutes, add the stems, add the chili, add the garlic. Put some pasta on, the ones that look like little ears.
Orecchiette.
Yes. And then add some capers as well.
Ah, nice. Nice touch.
Then get a cup of the pasta water, put that in with everything. Dump the pasta in with it all. Mix it all together. Add some black pepper while you're mixing. Then bung a load of parmesan as well.
How many tablespoons?
Huh? An eighth.
Carol.
Always an eighth. And then load of parmesan. Then you're ready to go.
Yeah. But
it sounds delicious.
It's a Tom Carriage recipe. I'll just say that. Just before.
We added the capers.
Fair enough.
But yeah.
You can't trademark a recipe, so you're good. You're good. Yeah. You didn't even have to do that. The capers.
Yeah. Yeah, we corn-ribbed him.
Yeah, he's absolutely corn-ribbed that guy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely corn-ribbed Kevin. I have a question about the shawarma.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Do you want the Avengers with you while you eat it?
The Avengers.
Yes, the superheroes, the Avengers.
All of them?
They like shawarma. I think it was Iron Man.
It was the original one, right? The original film.
Iron Man, Captain
To be
America.
Honest, no, I don't want people with me.
Thor, Black Widow, and Hawkeye.
Are they people, though?
Well, this is it, yeah. You don't want anyone, you want to be alone.
To be for this particular, I'm actually not like being alone. I'm terrified of being alone normally. I love people around me. But for this particular dish, I love to be alone because it's quite embarrassing. You know, it's very animalistic the way you kind of you tuck into it and you like your whole face is in there.
Then may I suggest that you pop into the garden and get your clothes off?
Pop them off.
It's a very good
idea. Pop your pants off, Yota. You're going to the bottom of the garden.
The problem is you get it in the shawarma shop.
Yeah.
And to get to the garden is quite a schlep. So you need to kind of get in the car, drive, get your clothes off. It's cold by then. All the fats have coagulated. Yeah, it's like the whole fun is gone.
Put the shawarma there. So, just check it.
That's why, you know, maybe you should open a shawarma shop with a little garden, a little private garden in the back.
I think with a bunch of naked people just eating the shawarma. Let's just imagine that for a second.
That sounds so delicious.
Yes.
The fluffy pitta as well. I think I've had some pretty bad pittas in my time.
Yep.
The worst pitta you can get is the one you can get like a normal pitta in a supermarket. I think it's a disgrace. It's so dry. I mean, I'd never get that. So obviously it's nice to make your own, but you could get in some Jewish bakeries in North London, you can get nice fluffy pittas. Yeah. And I mean, it's just something completely different.
Yeah.
I am Donna in Hamburger. It's the best pitta.
Oh, really?
That I've had. Yeah, for a kebab. Like just really fluffy. I could eat it on its own, that pitta, and it'd be just like
I mean,
so
that
delicious.
Is the test, isn't it? Yeah. You need to enjoy it on its own before you start loading it with stuff. I mean, that's like the true test.
Yeah.
But that for me, this is like really kind of like basic. It's like the beyond restaurant experience, going out and eating street food like that, like stuff that's just like uninhibitedly delicious and nobody cares. And like,
and tahini as well.
Yeah.
Tahini on everything, please.
Tahini, or you could do like a tahini or a garlic sauce or yogurt garlic. Oh, so good.
I mentioned I Am Donna recently. Nish was there, our friend Nish Kumar. And I said to him, whoever it was I was recommending it to, I said, Nish loves them. Your favourite kebabs, right? And Nish very moodily said, no, they're not. And then corrected me on what his favourite kebabs are. Can you guess which one's his
favourite?
No, not Palmyra. That would have been
Kebab
my second guess. Kebab Kid, yes.
Kebab Kid, yeah.
No, Kebab Kid's the best. And then he walked away.
Kebab Kid's on New King's Road in Parsons Green. Yeah, it's been there for like 30, 40 years, I think. Yeah.
And those are the best kebabs?
They're very good kebabs, yeah.
Ed and Nish used to live opposite Kebab Kid. Those were some dangerous days.
Yeah. Nish used to get one a day sometimes, I think.
Yeah. He's no longer with us. But we like to live stories about him just to remember our friend.
Yeah, no, that is, and he didn't go naked in the garden to eat his kebab.
No, we were in a flat, like, unfortunately, so it was just, they just used to hang it all out the window. Yeah,
instant arrest.
Yeah. Is there anywhere, like in London, I mean, I'm saying it for the listener, but for myself, that you can get a really good shawarma like that?
Shawarma? I can't say that I know. I haven't done a proper search of that. It's just, for me, it's just something that I have left back from my time in Israel. And when I do go there, I go. And there's also, these days, in Tel Aviv, which has got great food, there's these kind of posh kebab places. But they didn't change anything fundamentally. It's just the components are a little bit better, like better sourced, etc. But the whole essence of it is like super fresh, off the skewer, with all the condiments as they should be. But they are... a bit more like professorial about it. You know, they got like kind of, they measure exactly how much they put in each layer.
Right, okay.
So every bite has got like equal quantities of everything, and you see how they do it. Mm. And they do have that, like there is a bunch of dishes that like go in a pita like that, which, like, you know, there is another one which I absolutely love that involves like in aubergine, hard boiled egg, and a kind of fenugreek-y, mango-y sauce with the salad, and also the French fries sometimes or not, and that's called sabir, and it's the same thing. So again, they put a layer of the aubergines, a layer of the salad, a layer of the French fries, and an egg, and it's just...
Oh my gosh.
And so your dream side dish is the chips?
My dream side dish is the chips, because it goes in, but I mentioned it as a side dish because you don't want anything else on the side, right? Uh-huh. Like, so it's like, you could have it on the side, and if you... if you insist that I have a side dish that is actually on the side,
no.
then I'll just stuff it. I didn't know how formal you guys are.
It's your dream meal.
It's your dream meal. Look, you can have that. So it's all in the shawarma. If there could be a few extra chips on the side.
Let's just do that. Let's do that.
So your dream drink then?
So this is where I kind of, I was thinking like when I was growing up, we had this malt drink, like fizzy malt drink. Mm-hmm. So in Israel, people don't drink a lot of alcohol. So the beer, it was called black beer, which is like non-alcoholic beer. And it was like here we have like, what's it called? The Maltese.
Super malt.
So it's a bit like super malt. It's slightly different, like in the flavor. It's a bit more caramelly. It's darker, but it's like those kind of flavors. And we used to have that with our. And I thought I'd ask for that because it will take me back and I'll get the whole experience. But then I also really love Campari, but not with that. I just love Campari. Yeah. So I thought, like, if you want to hear what I'd have next to that, that will be that. And if you want what I love Campari.
But you could have, you know, we could have Campari as a little sort of pre-dinner.
I think that that's thing. What we should
have. Yeah, we could add that. Yeah.
We should have Campari on ice with a bit of orange, and that's just as it is, with not with sparkling water or anything like that. No. Not in this case, no.
Would you normally have it at the start of a meal?
I don't drink it all the time, but when we often go on holiday to Greece, this is a kind of a tradition that goes back about 10 years when we go to Greece with a bunch of friends when we're at the house. My sister comes with her kids and other people come along, and we have this kind of wonderful week of just like cooking and swimming, and we don't do anything but kind of that. And we always start the evening, before we start cooking, with Campari on ice with orange. And it's, for me, that is just like holiday. It's just amazing. Such a good thing.
The great Benito just went on holiday to Greece.
Did you?
He hated it.
He had the worst.
He had a wake in hell. He said it was a wake in hell. It's a bustling boy.
He needs roller coasters.
He loves roller coasters.
Yeah, well, you don't go to Greece for that.
No. I like a good roller coaster myself.
Roller coaster. Fair enough. Yeah,
I was about to tell you about the best one I've been on, but I can't.
Please.
I can't tell you because the great Benito doesn't like spoilers when it comes to roller coasters, and this is one he hasn't been on. So I literally am not allowed to describe it to people in front of him because he will leave the room.
Okay, and we need him.
We need him.
We do need him.
And so you also are a big roller coaster fan.
No, not really, but I just had a very good roller coaster experience recently. Where I was like, oh yeah, this is why people love roller coasters. I get it. Because you know, they can.
Don't build it up too much for him.
That's a good point, actually. I can't do that. He'll go on there going, what was James going on about this for? But you know, at their best, Benito, they make you experience life in a whole new way, right? It makes you feel the way you've never felt before, a good roller coaster.
Wow, you're really building this up, though.
Yeah, that's how it felt.
He's going to be sat on there with the cheese dish from the French, just having an awful time. This should be the best day of my life.
Now, the malt drink sounds very intriguing as well.
Yeah. So it's just really, it's a dark malt, like fizzy malt. It's sweet. It's sweet and really, really dark, and it's really malty. So it's refreshing, and you give it to kids because obviously they don't drink beer. And as I said, people are not like huge alcohol drinkers back home. Maybe now they more are, but historically it wasn't like. But that is something you have with your dinner.
Yeah,
and it's really good with all this stuff because it's just like in the same way that wine doesn't work with street food most of the time, right? Like it's just too delicate and sharp and kind of, it just doesn't work. So those were, if you're not going to drink proper beer.
How big's the bottle?
The bottles are pretty big. They're like a liter or three quarters of a liter. You don't finish it.
Mime you're doing for it all the time is huge. So I was like,
maybe I was
little
smaller.
Kids must look
maybe.
I guess it's because you were a kid
Kid. Yeah. But you don't finish it. Like you have it at the table and everybody shares. It's not you don't get an individual bottle. Fair. Yeah.
It's funny when you're a kid, isn't it? We were talking about this, me and my wife, the other day. Uh-huh. How big food is.
How big food is?
Yeah.
I get it.
Like, we saw a baby with a cookie, and the baby was like literally like looking at this thing like, I don't think I'm ever going to get through this. It's bigger than my face.
But they do. Yeah. Actually, they do get
through.
They
do, but it takes it like gumming away at a cookie for ages.
Well, it goes on the floor.
I have two young boys. Right? They're not that young anymore, so they're 7 years old and 9 years old. And they can eat cookies. I mean, they can eat so much. cookies.
Do you think, like, as a chef with kids, are you like trying to push them a certain way with food, or are you thinking, if I just let them do whatever they want, they can get this out of their system, and when they're older, maybe they'll make better decisions?
Well, I am not the latter. Uh-huh. No, I'm not so cool like that. Uh-huh. Like, I let them kind of like eat things, but I put a limit to how many like sour Skittles they can have, and I also make sure that they are exposed to nice food. So even if they don't want to eat it, and to be honest, they haven't been like the best. Like people would always say, oh, the Ottolenghi kids, they probably eat like olives and, you know, and like when since they're born. And in actual fact, they've gone through quite like finicky stages. But this summer, we went to Paris for the first time and they ate snails. Like they love eating snails. Wow. And I thought like, that is super cool. Now I can, they're finally there.
Yeah.
But we've gone through like a period where they just like wouldn't eat anything that's green, like it's got green bits in it and all the rest. So that it's tough sometimes because
that must be gutting.
There's so much effort that goes into food, and the rejection with kids is just so extreme. You know, there's no niceties. You know, they don't moderate their behavior for you. They'll go like, "That's okay," and put it to the side. They go like, "That's disgusting," or they go like, "That is just not as good as we get at school." Yeah. That is crushing.
Oh, wow.
That is crushing. Yeah. That is right. Yeah. That is very bad.
The celeriac shawarma at school is so much better.
I know. Yeah.
This doesn't even have the essence of spinach. What are you talking about? Going back to the kid with a cookie as big as his head. I'm pretty sure, am I right in thinking that your wife started that conversation?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Just making sure that I knew.
Yeah. So what did you say? Like, how can the kid possibly finish this
cookie? No, it wasn't even that. It was like, food is so big when you're a child.
Yeah. There's a very...
And the thing is, if she started their conversation with anyone else, there would be like 5 minutes where they're going, what are you talking about? That's such a weird thing to say. But I'm now obviously so in tune with what she means. I'm like, yeah, I know. Well, let's have this chat.
It's very big when you're a child.
I have a memory like that. So when I was a child, when I was around like 7 or 8, we went to live in California for 1 year because my dad had a job there. And we lived outside San Francisco. And I remember one of my first experiences, like the most memorable one, was how big the food was. There was one time we went to this restaurant and someone ordered a salad, and it was just like a pyramid of like ingredients. It was so big. And on top of there were like 3 like cocktail umbrellas, you know. And I was looking at it like, how can, and I'm sure it wasn't because I was small. I'm sure it was like massive.
America. It's just America. Yeah.
And I was just like, how could that be true and real? I mean, that salad, I'll never forget that. Like, to that day, I'm traumatized.
It's crazy. Like, I've spent a bit of time in America, and if you're like, well, I'll have a healthy day, I'll just order a salad. I ordered like a Cobb salad once. And it was on like a dinner plate, like a serving plate for one person. And then just like a line of chicken that must be about 3 chicken breasts, a block of blue cheese, egg, like 8 eggs. And you're like, this was me trying to be healthy.
Yeah.
And then you pour the dressing on the top. Well, I ate the whole thing.
Yeah, of course. The whole thing, it is mad.
Delicious.
But the trouble is that it's quantity over quality, isn't it? It's like so much, but actually it normally doesn't taste very much either. So you kind of just like try to get to the flavor, but it never comes.
This is going to blow your mind.
Go on.
My first meal that I had in Disney World on my recent holiday. Starter, snails. Main course, Cobb salad. What the hell is going on?
Wow.
This is one conversation, and you guys are...
You had snails at Disney World?
Yeah.
Who serves snails at Disney World?
Brown's Derby Diner. I went to Brown's Derby.
How do you remember that as well? I mean, was it so recent?
It's recent, but the main thing I was obsessed with was making sure we had good food all week. So we were there for a week at Disney World. So
he doesn't have kids.
What a nightmare.
I don't have kids. And so...
A week?
Yeah, it's just me and my girlfriend. One of the best holidays I've ever had. So it's just absolutely brilliant.
So... You wake up in the morning and you go like, I'm going to spend the day in Disney World. And then the next day you wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to spend my day in Disney World.
Yes. But what you got to bear in mind is there's 4 different parks. So you're not going to the same park every day. And there's also Disney Springs. And you just get to take your time a little bit. We're basically there for, we ended up being there for 6 days because we had a whole palaver with our flights.
Oh my God, you missed the 7th day.
We missed the first day. But I think they basically did. But it was great. And I was really obsessed. My girlfriend was on top of everything, but I was obsessed with food and what we're going to eat. So I didn't want to eat bad Disney food all week. So because, the first meal we had...
James is a gourmand, you know, so this week in Disney World...
I'm starting not to believe that, but I mean, why would the gourmand go to Disney World? I guess there's really good restaurants in Disney World. I've never been.
Going for the food, obviously, but I was like, we're going to have to eat while we're there. I don't want to just eat, like, the worst theme park food ever for a week. It's going to be depressing.
Yeah.
So I've got to find what the best food at Disney World is so that I can make sure that, like, it's good and I like it. And Brown's Derby was our first meal that we had when we got there. So we've had like a day and a half living in an airport, so our flight got delayed, cancelled and all sorts. So we get there and I'd just been thinking about Brown's Derby for ages. I've been looking on the app in the airport and going, what am I going to order when I get to Brown's Derby, man? Because that's my first meal when I get there. I was like, I'm going to get the snails. I'm going to get that Cobb salad. It's the world-famous Cobb salad. And I'm going to get...
Cobb salad.
It's what it says on the list. On the menu, it calls world-famous Cobb salad.
They don't even call them menus.
Yeah. And then I was like, dessert, I'm going to get the 50th anniversary baked Alaska. And that's exactly what I did. And it was delicious.
You're going to get the cheese course.
Not at Brown's Derby. Not at Brown's Derby.
Not tempted to open a restaurant in Disney World?
Well, now that you say it, if you got some such gourmands coming to Disney World, then I would probably just, that would be the next stop.
There's a gap in the market there. Because actually what we ended up doing is we had locked in the reservations and we cancelled all of them because actually a lot of the restaurants we found, by day two, we're like, do you know what? These restaurants aren't very good, but the snacks that we're getting along the way in Disney are great. Oh, so we've cancelled all our dinner reservations and just snacked our way around the park. That's my top tip.
So what were the snacks, like some highlight snacks?
Oh, let me tell you. Cheeseburger spring rolls.
Oh, wow.
I dream of them still to this day.
Do you?
Yeah, the cheeseburger spring rolls.
So the cheeseburger in the spring roll, you get the burger and the cheese, or you also get the bun?
No bun. Burger and cheese.
James, this is disgraceful.
Maybe some pickles.
You've got Yota Mottolenghi on the podcast.
You need to balance. It's yin and yang.
From
you,
Disney World,
you know,
if you please.
No, this is so embarrassing, Yota.
And a burger sauce dip. So you get two spring rolls, two cheeseburger spring rolls, burger sauce dip, and you eat them while you're going over the bridge, and it is a wonderful start to the day.
And then you chuck yourself off the bridge because they make you feel so sad.
If the river was full of spring rolls, I would chuck myself off the bridge. If it was full of cheeseburger spring rolls, I'd chuck myself off the bridge immediately, happily. But yeah, cheeseburger spring rolls are my top recommendation. I love them.
And how's the roller coaster?
Great.
Is that the roller coaster?
No. Oh, yeah, the roller coaster was the food.
What roller coaster was it?
It was Cosmic Rewind. Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind. It's the best roller coaster I've ever been on in my life. No spoilers. We arrive at your dream dessert.
Okay, so my dream dessert is a tiramisu. And I hope I'm not like a lot of people on the show have already went... on for this.
It's not
as often as I would have thought. Because it's obviously a very popular
something dessert that I've been exposed to from also quite a young age. Like my mum used to make tiramisu and then I've made it myself. And I just, for me, it's just like the ultimate dessert. It's got like, it's creamy, it's spongy, it's got like coffee and alcohol and it's just a bit of chocolate on top if you want to. I mean, it's just so good. And I don't know, I can't say much more about it. I just love a tiramisu.
It's one of those ones where I think my dad told me when I was a kid that this is the best dessert in the world. And because I just believed everything my dad said, I thought that was official. So I still think of it now that...
Well, it's the best dessert in the world.
Well, the best dessert in the world is tiramisu.
Yeah, that's right. It is the best dessert in the world. And I think it's like, it's got this perfection. It's subtle. It's not like... I like lots of desserts. But this one is sophisticated.
It's a grown-up. It's a grown-up dessert.
Yeah, but it's not so grown-up like that. It's great. I mean, I often think about it as like, so Italians have tiramisu and Brits have trifle. I actually like trifle too, but trifle can go wrong in so many ways, and tiramisu doesn't really go wrong. So in trifle, if you get the fruit aspect too much, can it really dispose of that? When the moment where the fruit touches the cream and all becomes a bit like
the liquidy,
bad. So. Yeah. A good trifle needs to prevent that from happening. So it's much easier to get a bad trifle. But a tiramisu, that hardly ever happens. It's kind of all soft and it all comes together at the end. Nothing wrong, really bad can happen.
So in Superbad, they make tiramisu in cookery class near the beginning of the film. And they've messed it up and they just say, just grate loads of chocolate on it and it'll be fine. And they're doing that. So I think Superbad knows what it's on about.
Yeah.
But it agrees with you that you can't really mess up a tiramisu.
I think I only started to like tiramisu recently because it does feel like more of a grown-up dessert. And a lot of my dessert love comes from when I was a kid. It feels nostalgic. Like I really like chocolate, so anything really chocolatey I'm into. But now eating tiramisu, it feels as a kid, I was not into it because it's like heavy coffee and
taste. It's not just for the, but you can adjust it for kids. Like you could, it doesn't have to have as much coffee, and you can actually,
now, yeah.
And you like, you can kind of do it like a nice syrup, like a sugar maple-y syrup or something like that, and then you dip them, and it's fine. You don't have to have.
Have you had? Because you must like go to loads of different other chefs' restaurants and try all that stuff, and like weird like versions of things, deconstructed. Have you had like weird versions of tiramisu where they've done it completely differently, tried to reinvent it?
I'm trying to think. I'm sure I have. I mean, and the thing is that like when you go to Italian restaurants and they sit there in the refrigerated cupboard, the cupboard that you can actually see through because it's like it's a glass fridge. You always think that that is probably sat there for too long and it's not going to be nice. Mm. All those cakes and desserts that sit in that, but they always surprise you when you go to a good Italian restaurant because all the rest comes from the kitchen, but those things have sat and you think like, oh, I want something fresh that's been plated for me. But tiramisu actually really benefits from that. I'm trying to think if I had a deconstructed tiramisu. No, I don't. Nothing comes to mind.
The classic's the best, right?
I think because it needs to sit. Mm. I think you don't eat tiramisu as soon as you made it. You need to really let it settle.
So then you can cut
and then you can cut it, refrigerate. Yeah. But also it comes together like so many other foods. It's kind of like, yeah, it needs to... The ingredients need to have a little time together to settle, to play, to get to know each other.
Still find it impossible every time people talk about tiramisu or mention it not to think of Milton Jones's joke that his daughter wrote for him.
Go on.
Ask me if I want a tiramisu.
Do you want a tiramisu?
Don't mind if I tiramadoo.
Lovely.
His daughter said it once to him at the table and then he just put it in his show. Didn't even tell the audience his daughter said it. He just went, tiramisu? Don't mind if I tiramadoo. Big laugh every night.
Yeah.
I'm going to read your menu back to you now, see how you feel about it. You would like Campari on ice with some orange before the meal begins.
That's right.
Then sparkling water. You would like some sourdough from the Dusty Knuckle with salted butter. Mm. Starter, your grandmother's semolina gnocchi with cheese and nutmeg. Main course, chicken shawarma in pita with salad, tahini, pickles, side dish, chips, which you want in the pita. Drink, the black beer, the fizzy malt. Dessert, tiramisu. That's
right.
A very clean menu as well. That's very like
delicious.
Simple.
Because things are familiar, kind of. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
and I love that. Are you going to serve it to me?
Yes, right now.
Absolutely. Get in the garden.
Get in there. Put your clothes over there.
Yotam, thanks so much for coming to the Dream Restaurant.
It was a pleasure.
What a wonderful, wonderful menu.
It was always going to be delicious. We knew it, but it was great to hear it. Great to hear the recipes, the techniques broken down sometimes as well. Real top-notch stuff and not any mild cheddar in sight.
No. And a lovely man who dealt with us very well, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think he found us charming.
Yeah. At no point before we interviewed Yotam Ottolenghi did I think he'd have to sit through so much rollercoaster chat.
Yeah, and, you know, sat through it, he did.
Yeah.
But we appreciate it, Yotam. Yeah. And anytime you want to talk about Disney World again, you know, I'll happily recommend all the snacks.
Yeah.
Hopefully one day Yotam Ottolenghi is going to try cheeseburger spring rolls from the spring roll cart at Disney World.
I'm not sure, man. I was looking at his face all the way through that. He looked absolutely disgusted by it.
I don't know.
Do go and buy Ottolenghi Test Kitchen Extra Good Things by Yotam and by Noor Mourad and the rest of the Ottolenghi Test Kitchen. I've had a bigger read now. I'm very excited to cook some stuff from it. It is out now and it's published by Ebury Press.
When I die, bury me with Ebury Press.
Also, go onto my website because I'm coming to Australia soon. See you in Australia.
Oh.
For gigs. I'm not on holiday. I'm not plugging my holiday.
No. Keep that hush.
Get on my website. Check it out. I'm going to hit up some Australian cities and some New Zealand cities.
Ebury Press. I read a little book and then I say yes.
Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell. If you enjoy, there's another podcast just coming out. Oh, no, the podcast is out now.
Yeah. If people have enjoyed Off Menu, will they enjoy Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains? I don't know.
There's a bit of crossover. We talk about a couple of food issues. We talk about cutlery, and that's near food. We reckon it's out now. Not soon, it's now.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. If you like James and if you love Ed, you might get a kick out of this. But yeah, again, no pressure. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.